The odds are quite good that somewhere around you right now, as you're listening to me speak these words, is a battery. Whether it's in your smartphone, earbuds, automobile, smoke detector, or laptop, batteries have become ubiquitous in the modern world. The origins of chemical batteries go back thousands of years before people even knew what electricity was or what they could do with it. The future of batteries looks even brighter, as more devices will require more and better batteries. Learn more about batteries, how they work, and how they've developed over time on this episode of Everything Everywhere Daily. This episode is sponsored by Memento. Most families have stories of other family members and loved ones that are shared from person to person. However, many of those stories are lost over time, or they're never shared at all. Memento is a company that helps individuals and families record important events. In Memento's most popular product, Lifebook, participants are asked questions about their lives and document them in a high-quality hardbound book. Unlike other providers, however, Memento goes one step further. In addition to usual questions about your life that awaken your memories, you can also use Memento to create special memory books, for example, about loved ones who have passed away, together with the whole family. And not just in writing, but also with voice memos and videos that can be inserted into the books and played back. The special group editing function brings the family, especially grandchildren and grandparents, even closer together. With Mother's Day just around the corner, this may be the one gift that will not only honor your mom's life, but will provide lasting memories for years to come. For my listeners, Memento has something special. Use code EED15 and get a 15% discount on your order. Visit memento.com, M-E-M-I-N-T-O, and start your journey into the world of personal stories. This episode is sponsored by newspapers.com, your passport to untold stories and hidden histories. As the largest online newspaper archive, newspapers.com offers an incredible journey through time, with papers dating back to 1690. Imagine exploring the news, events, and everyday moments that shape the history of the world around us. Newspapers.com puts over 900 million pages at your fingertips, offering a front-row seat to the past. With papers from the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and beyond, Newspapers.com lets you walk the streets of history, whether it's London during the Blitz, New York during Prohibition, or Sydney during the construction of the Harbor Bridge. For listeners of today's episode, Newspapers.com is extending a special offer. Use the code EVERYTHINGEVERYWHERE and enjoy a 20% discount on a subscription. That's EVERYTHINGEVERYWHERE at Newspapers.com. It's the perfect way to unlock the world of history. Everyone listening to this, I'm sure, is familiar with batteries. You use devices that have them, you probably have had to replace them, and every so often you have to buy them or recharge them. Most people, however, don't know what's going on inside of a battery or how modern batteries were developed. So let's start this discussion by going way back in time, about 2,000 years, to the city of Baghdad. In 1936, a device was discovered there that's been dubbed the Baghdad Battery. It was nothing more than a clay pot with a copper tube and an iron rod. The inside of the pot was found to contain some sort of acid, which could have been from vinegar or wine. The initial theory published about the device's purpose claimed that it was for electroplating. It would use weak electricity to put a thin layer of metal over another metal. Other theories hold that it just created a weak current that people could touch, and it could have been used for medicinal or religious purposes. These theories have been disputed, and most archaeologists don't think that the device was a battery. However, on several occasions, people have recreated the Baghdad Battery, and they were able to produce a weak current. And this was actually done on an episode of the Mythbusters TV show, and they managed to get it to work. So, if it wasn't a battery, it did actually work as a battery. And if it was a battery, then we have no evidence that anything ever came of it. So, fast forward to the late 18th century for the next advancements in batteries. In the late 18th century, scientists were just discovering what electricity was and how it worked. Early researchers were able to store electricity in what was known as a Leyden jar. A Leyden jar is just a glass jar that stores and discharges electrical energy using a glass jar lined inside and out with metal foil. Technically, it wasn't a battery, but a capacitor. Capacitors store electricity in an electric field. Benjamin Franklin worked with Leyden jars, and when he hooked up multiple Leyden jars together, he called them an electrical battery. He took the name from what is a collection of artillery that are used together in the military. The word battery, meaning multiple things working together, stuck, but it was later used to mean something slightly different from a capacitor. The first true battery was created in 1800 by the Italian electricity researcher Alessandro Volta. He created a device known as a voltaic pile. His device consisted of alternating discs of zinc and copper with pieces of cardboard soaked in brine in between the metals. His device had all of the elements that we think of today as a battery. This would be a good time to describe what a battery is and the basics of how a battery works. To understand how a battery works, we have to start with the basic unit, an electrical cell. A cell stores electrical energy chemically. A basic cell requires three parts: an anode, a cathode, and an electrolyte. The anode is the negative terminal of a cell, and it consists of some substance that wants to give up electrons easily. Lithium is a good example of such a substance. In Volta's voltaic pile, the anode was zinc. The cathode is the positive terminal of a cell, and it consists of something that wants to hold on to electrons. In Volta's pile, copper served as the cathode. In between the anode and the cathode is some substance which serves as an electrolyte. An electrolyte can be a solid, liquid, or gel that transports electrons between the anode and the cathode. In Volta's pile, the electrolyte was salt water that was permeated in the cardboard. When the anode and the cathode are connected, it creates a circuit, and the electrical potential between the anode and the cathode causes an electrical current. That, at its core, is all an electrical cell is: anode, cathode, and electrolyte. And a battery is just a collection of cells in series or in parallel. Volta's voltaic pile was able to produce a constant current of electricity, which was something that you couldn't do with a Leyden jar, which would expend all of its charge at once. And this allowed researchers to study actual electrical currents, not just static electrical charges. As much of a leap in technology as Volta's battery was, there were still serious limitations. Over the course of the 19th century, many innovations were made to improve batteries. In 1836, John Frederick Daniell invented the Daniell cell, which was more stable and produced a steadier current than Volta's pile. There were over a half a dozen achievements in battery design that improved the current and voltage of batteries. However, they all shared one fundamental problem. Once the battery was assembled, it discharged but couldn't be recharged. These are all known as primary batteries. This changed in 1859 with the invention of the lead-acid battery by the French physicist Gaston Plante. The lead-acid battery used a lead anode and a lead dioxide cathode immersed in sulfuric acid as the electrolyte. And the great thing about the lead-acid battery was that once it was discharged, it could be recharged by running the current the other way. The lead-acid battery is fundamentally the same type of battery that can be found in most automobiles today. Further developments in battery technology have mostly involved the use of other substances as anodes and cathodes. There were also batteries that used an alkaline electrolyte rather than an acid electrolyte. In 1881, the first commercially successful dry cell battery made of zinc and carbon hit the market. It didn't require a liquid electrolyte as most batteries of the time did. Throughout the early 20th century, the world became more and more electrified, and there were more and more devices and uses for electric batteries. One of the more popular batteries in use during this period was the zinc carbon battery. This period also saw the introduction of standard battery sizes. The National Carbon Company introduced the D-cell in 1898, and the Eveready Battery Company introduced what we know as the AA battery in 1907 and the AAA battery in 1911. The main problem with zinc carbon batteries is that they didn't have a very long life. The next big innovation in batteries was one that solved that problem, the alkaline battery. In 1949, a Canadian researcher named Louis Urey was working for the Eveready Battery Company. Urey was tasked with finding a way to improve the lifespan and performance of existing zinc-carbon batteries. He experimented with different materials and formulations, ultimately discovering that a manganese dioxide cathode and a zinc anode, when used with an alkaline potassium hydroxide electrolyte, significantly improved performance. These new alkaline batteries lasted 5 to 8 times longer than zinc carbon batteries. Alkaline batteries were a huge improvement. They're still used today, and they have a very high energy density and are very affordable. However, they also had a downside. They couldn't be recharged. They had to be purchased and disposed of, and many of the early alkaline batteries used mercury, which was a big problem in landfills. What was desired was a battery that had a high energy density and was rechargeable, and ideally it should also be lightweight and affordable. A massive step towards this goal was taken with the development of lithium batteries. Lithium is the third lightest element on the periodic table, and it also has the highest electrochemical potential of any metal. Attempts at lithium batteries began in the first years of the 20th century. However, it wasn't until the 1970s that serious research began. The first lithium-based batteries came to market in 1991 as a joint project of the Sony Corporation and the Ashikasi Chemical Corporation. These batteries were known as lithium-ion batteries, and today they encompass an entire category of batteries. Lithium-ion batteries were truly revolutionary. They had a host of benefits over traditional alkaline batteries. For starters, they were rechargeable, which meant you didn't have to buy new batteries every time they ran out of charge. They also had a much higher energy density and provided higher currents for longer periods of time for items that required more current, like power tools. They have low self-discharge, meaning that if they're left alone, their charge will not disappear quickly. And finally, they can be in any number of shapes and sizes. Lithium-ion batteries were almost single-handedly responsible for the revolution in battery-powered wireless devices over the last 30 years. Laptops, mobile phones, power tools, electric cars, and almost any other device you can think of is reliant on some form of lithium-ion battery today. Since their release in 1991, lithium-ion batteries have continued to improve. Energy density has increased threefold since that time, while their costs have dropped tenfold. While lithium-ion batteries ushered in a revolution in batteries, they're not perfect. The biggest weakness is that lithium-ion batteries are a fire risk. Granted, the risk is low, but if a battery is punctured and the liquid electrolyte can escape, it can cause a fire. Another problem is that dendrites can grow inside the electrolytes. Dendrites are solid fingers of lithium that can grow slowly. If they grow large enough, they can cross from cathode to anode and cause a short circuit in the battery. Given the importance of batteries in the world's economy, more research is being done on battery technology today than ever before. Anyone who can come up with large-scale improvements in battery technology stands to make a fortune. One such promising technology is solid-state batteries. Solid-state batteries are conceptually very simple. It replaces the liquid or gel electrolyte with a solid. Most people don't realize that their electronic devices have a liquid inside of them, but they do. Granted, the liquid isn't sloshing around and it's in very thin layers, but it's a liquid nonetheless. Solid-state batteries have the potential to revolutionize batteries in the same way that lithium-ion batteries did several decades before. For starters, they would be much safer, as there's no risk of an electrolyte leaking. They would charge faster, have higher energy density, last longer, and they could operate at higher and lower temperatures. This could mean an electric car that only required half the battery size that current electric cars do, resulting in decreased prices. Or alternatively, a battery of the same size that could go twice as far. Perhaps even more importantly, a car could be fully charged in just a fraction of the time that it currently takes to charge an electric car. And the same would hold true for all electronic devices that need to be recharged. Due to the weight and electrochemical potential of lithium, future solid-state batteries will still probably be lithium-based. However, not every battery application requires something lightweight that can charge quickly. Sometimes you just want something cheap and forego other battery attributes. One such potential technology is known as an air-iron battery. As the name would suggest, an iron-air battery stores energy via the oxidation of iron with air. aka rusting, and then creates electrical energy by reversing the process. Iron air batteries are very heavy, and they don't charge quickly. But then again, they don't have to. The use case for iron air would be providing electrical storage for the entire grid or just for homes. The batteries don't have to be mobile, so weight isn't relevant. Likewise, they would be connected to a power source all of the time, so they would have plenty of time to charge up. The biggest benefit of iron air batteries is that they would be 10 times cheaper than lithium-ion batteries. Solid-state and iron-air batteries are far from the only new types of batteries being developed. There are also experiments being conducted on new substances like sulfur, which could also lead to dramatically improved outcomes. Battery demand is expected to grow dramatically over the next few decades. This is driving new exploration and mining efforts for new sources of lithium and rare earth elements. Since the creation of the first true battery over 200 years ago, batteries have steadily gotten better and become more important. This trend only seems to be accelerating. Decades from now, we'll probably be using even more batteries that are dramatically better than the ones we have today. The executive producer of Everything Everywhere Daily is Charles Daniel. The associate producers are Benji Long and Cameron Kiefer. I want to give a big shout out to everyone who supports the show over on Patreon, including the show's producers. Your support helps me put out a show every single day. And also, Patreon is currently the only place where Everything Everywhere Daily merchandise is available to the top tier of supporters. If you'd like to talk to other listeners of the show and members of the Completionist Club, you can join the Everything Everywhere Daily Facebook group or Discord server. Links to everything are in the show notes.